Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
All right, you're welcome along to Wednesday Night Rugby. Ronan O'Gara is on the line, live from France. Afternoon, Ronan.
Hi, Nathan. How are you?
I'm very well. So, as rugby...
Congratulations, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. There's a sketch, you know, where the presenter of this usually rubs his award, which I was tempted to do, but I'll save it till next time, perhaps. How's all in France? Is World Cup fever alive and well?
No, not really, no. It's the top 14, the marathon of a league campaign, so we're not going great at the minute, so... just got to hang in there now and hopefully the tide will turn. So it's, challenging times, difficult, especially in a new job. So play Brive on Saturday night. So big game for us, even if it's, game 7 of 26. But we're struggling at the minute a little bit.
Are you feeling stressed or are you feeling
in control of the situation? Feeling in control, but you're never... you can really never be too in control of it until you get a few results. So, and obviously to get results, you need performances. And we've had great periods in games where we have performed, and then we've let our kind of release pressure too easily in opposition teams. And as you know, we've won our two home games, lost four away games. So I don't think there's anywhere in the world where an away win is treasured are cherished as much as it is in France. But we haven't found the key to that yet, but hopefully that'll happen.
You're obviously well aware of that culture of the away game in French rugby from your time at Racing. Is that something you focused on in these first few months, trying to change that mindset that the away games are as important as the home games, or do you just have to sort of fit in with the culture and put everything into those home matches and hope that you nick the odd win away from home here and there?
No, I went the route of the latter in terms of treating every game on its own merits, and obviously that may have been a little bit of a mistake, but that's something that you kind of accept with the culture and also accept with probably a little bit of hindsight. But for me, you've just got to prepare as best you can for every game, and I try and explain to them sometimes that 4 points at home is the exact same as 4 points away. So I understand there's a big, massive cultural barrier or cultural shift we have to make, but it can be done. And you look at teams like Lyon and Bordeaux and they're performing wherever it is. So that can be us, that needs to be us. So it'll take a bit of time, but it's an enjoyable challenge in the fact that, as you said, I think if I didn't have my time in Crusaders, I think we probably would have been a lot more stressful, but now I'm kind of a big fan in the process, and I can see raise a hope around the place. There's a great bunch of players, a great staff here, so I think in that regard I'm pretty confident we'll turn the corner.
We're obviously a little bit concerned about Ireland's form at the Rugby World Cup, but God bless the French, things could always be worse, and as always there's rumours of a rift in the camp, this time between staff and players, most notably their captain Guillaume Garrido. Stories in Midi Olympique that relations have been strained for quite a while now and fallen apart completely since they arrived in Japan. Are you getting the inside track on this?
No, I'm not actually, because there aren't many French players involved in the in the World Cup squad. Obviously, Geoffrey Dumouroux was selected, but unfortunately, he has an Achilles injury, and Danny Priso was there right till the last few minutes, and he was decided he wasn't to be taken when he was an original member of their original World Cup squad. So I see a few snippets in the local papers right about Garrido and Galtier, and I don't think that was ever a good relationship. But also, I think this is what happens at World Cups for France. There hasn't been one in the past where they haven't, either players have a revolt or they've kind of sat out training, there's always something juicy when it comes to it. But in fairness to them, they're a team that always produces at World Cup. So, I think it's very, from a rugby point of view, it's hard to say that they'll be a better team than England.
Mm.
But you just don't ever know with them.
Yeah, and that's one of those games that may well be affected by the typhoon. We'll find out in the early hours of this morning, possibility that game might well be played indoors. You mentioned it's done them no harm in the past, you think, particularly back in 2011 when they very nearly shocked the All Blacks in the final. When you're talking about that French rugby culture, and maybe it is just the national team, but have you noticed a difference in attitude and relationships between players and coaches in French rugby, that this thing can happen more often than it would in Irish rugby?
It would be, yeah, because obviously there's a greater volume of players and the turnover of players is huge. There's 14 professional clubs. Off the ball or live tweeting, and I have to remove them to see you, mate.
So you can actually afford to fall out with people a little bit more in French rugby?
Well, I think it's part of our culture over here. I think the relationships wouldn't be anywhere near as strong, especially I think one of the most enjoyable things from my time in Munster was how tight we were as a group, as a squad of players, but also as a whole group. And you can even include supporters in that, but the playing and management groups are so important. And there was a key turnover of players, but nowhere near the volume we'd have over here. So like, what's happening at the minute is a lot of players are French, they will get opportunities in other French clubs. So that cycle of being able to kind of make a living out of the game exists in France, because you can move from, you know, in La Rochelle to Bordeaux to Brive to Agen to Toulon to Stade Francais if you're a youth qualified player. But how it affects them, I think, negatively at test level is the fact that has there been 20 different combinations at halfback in, I don't know the exact figure, but maybe even in the last 3 years of test rugby, which is a staggering amount. So it's very hard, I think. You look at Conor Murray, you look at Johnny Sexton, you look at Aaron Smith, Bowden Barrett, now it's Mwanga. But these guys, the real, I think, warrant and trust is it's built up over a number of years and the number of times you've been in the trenches with that guy.
So let's talk about Ireland then. In their pool this morning, Scotland beat Russia 61-0. So that means Ireland simply have to get a bonus point against Samoa on Saturday, or else it's going to be out of our hands. I don't know how much you've been following the coverage back here in Ireland. There's a definite sense when you're reading the pundits, you're listening on the radio, watching on the television, that there's a sense of doom and gloom outside of the camp about where Ireland are right now, that there's no momentum, there's no flair, there's no real energy there. How difficult is it when you're actually at a World Cup to ignore that, for Joe Schmidt to stop his players thinking like that and to get them into that mindset maybe they had in 2018? Like, is it easy to block out the outside noise?
Yes and no. I think when you have really confident players, those external noises or external factors aren't as much of an issue, but that's usually when you're be really confident, think that's as a result of performing at a really high level. So as you said, the 2018 form isn't there, but it came back with a massive bang against Scotland. But then 7 days later, or was it 6 days later, it evaporated against the Japanese. And then the Russian performance was, it was stuttery at best. So I would think the Samoa game actually is huge. I said prior to the competition, there's two huge games, the Scottish game and the quarterfinal. And, you know, little did I know that the Japanese would have the impact that they had in a pool stages. But hopefully, as you say, with the Russian game, with the Samoan games, if the boys do the business in that, it all comes down to that quarterfinal game. But on current form, Ireland will be outsiders, irrespective of who they play in that quarterfinal. And I don't think, outsiders, there's nothing really big or grand in that statement. But what has to be, equated into the debate is, like, how will the players deliver a performance? On what grounds or on what rocks will they build their performance to win a quarterfinal? And you'd have to say the confidence at the minute has to be unsettled. But I think the fact that between the Russian and the Samoan game, there's been a huge lull, or maybe that's just me potentially, and it feels like from Ireland's point of view, it's gone a little bit dead. And the fact that their competition actually nearly starts against Samoa now.
Yeah, that 9 day break where it does sort of die down, certainly outside the camp, and Joe Schmidt can get them back together as a group. And from your experience of the time you've spent with Joe Schmidt in a coaching role and the way he operates, What do you think are those key tenets that he'll focus on over that 9 days? What are the key parts of the game plan? Is it a mental thing where he tries to rejuvenate and get that confidence back, or is he focusing more on the tactical side of it in this break?
Oh, I think you're right. I think it's most definitely mental at this stage. I think it would be an error to try and go and overdo it on the training pitch. I think that was a massive learning from 2007, because we had such a caring group and a group that really wanted to perform. We essentially flogged ourselves with it, I felt. But at the time, you weren't aware of that, because you just, it meant so much to you train. But I think the challenge is mentally. And as you say, I think, actually, how can we get an enjoyment factor into this? Because you look around at all the teams playing, a lot of them are playing with a smile on their face, but Ireland are struggling a little bit in the terms of their body language, because it seems like a grind, and for good reason, because they really had a massive impact on the tournament. Like, the 40 minutes against Scotland was good as I've seen him play, and I think the way the pack demolished Scotland, it was like, whoa, this is back on now for everybody. But since that, probably, even the second half against Scotland, and not even, but they managed the game and they did exactly what they did. You couldn't ask for any much more. But the Japanese performance was disappointing. The Russian performance was average. So I think where there is a little bit of doubt would be the fact in 2018, I think you knew exactly when you sat in your coach how Ireland were going to perform. I think at the minute you're hoping a little bit, as opposed to sitting there in kind of waiting, if that makes sense to you.
Is there the possibility that actually when you sit down on your couch and it's opposition coaches sitting on their couch right now, knowing exactly how Ireland are going to perform, that it's all a little bit too predictable?
Yeah, good point, yeah. That would be, I think, I would say that would be something that had been addressed in camp. I think there has been positive shoots in their game. Even in the last few weeks, you could look, Ireland never played the ball under the tackle prior to the Scottish game, and I think they did that really well in that game. I think if the game becomes so much easier when you win collisions, Ireland, even against the Japanese, they're powerful, their footwork was exceptional, their speed at the ruck and their accuracy at the ruck, they won the collisions. So it looked like Ireland were kind of fatigued or exhausted. So you have to kind of, I think, give an awful lot of credit to the Japanese, and that's going to be such a great game to watch, the Japanese game and in the Scottish game, with so much at stake from a tactical point of view, how the opposing coaches are going to approach it. But coming back to your question, no, I think there's some, with someone like forgotten in all this, is the fact that I think what Joe Schmidt and Andy Farrell and Simon Easterby and Greg Feet bring to this, I think, is they bring great clarity. I think the boys will know their roles inside out. I think the improvement what they can make is their potential to probably see events unfold in front of their own eyes and play a little bit more instinctively. And I think that could be a winning formula for them.
When you talk there about Ireland not winning collisions, looking somewhat fatigued, exhausted, that sounds hugely worrying, considering so much of what Joe Schmidt does relies on Ireland winning those collisions. And does it make you worry in any sense that, as methodical and brilliant as Joe Schmidt can be, that maybe somehow Ireland have got their preparation here badly wrong in terms of the strength and conditioning side of things, in terms of having their players peaking at the right time, and that in a year's time we may well have players releasing books and be sitting down doing interviews going, geez, you know what, actually we were bloody wrecked when we got there. Something actually fundamentally has gone wrong in Ireland's build-up, that they're not at the level they should be right now.
No, I would be, there's a small percentage, but I would be, in the year 2019, I would be grossly shocked if that was the case. I just think this hasn't been something they've thought about in the last few months, Nathan. This has been, you know what I mean, a project ever since Ireland lost to Argentina in the Millennium Stadium in 2015. You can see that everything has become Team Ireland in Ireland in the last 4 years. The fact that, like, you go back to my time playing the game, the Munster-Leinster games were juicy games. It was all on. Those games are off now. It's Team Ireland now. Everything is focused to get the best 30 players healthy performing for Ireland. And I think there has been massive preparation, I would say, planning, focus, whatever the word is, for for peaking for the month of October and the 2nd of November in Japan. I genuinely believe that, and I think I would back you up in the fact that I would find great validity in actually how do you get that right, though, because is it actually warm-up games and gym, or are we better off having a look at the Southern Hemisphere model of playing kind of around 15 games before you arrive at a World Cup? That, for me, I find fascinating, and you know, it's not, I haven't said it here for the first time, but it would be something as a coach going forward that I think I would definitely look at. But on current form and looking at what's happening at the minute, you can see that so many of the key players, some of their minutes are in double figures. Mm. They need to be, I would think you probably play your best rugby after 300 to 600 minutes, and then that's when you get rid of them in your game.
Our rugby coverage with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. On that then, and gaining minutes, and because of the way it's gone so far, I guess the way that Ireland approached this game has totally changed in terms of team selection. The very fact that Scotland got that big win today means Ireland need that bonus point victory, and Samoa have proven stubborn opponents so far against both Scotland and Japan, even if they did get the job done eventually. The starting 15, is it all guns blazing for you? If needs must, you start the same 15 this Saturday as you start the following weekend in the quarter final. Are you still some ways thinking?
You're looking at, in an ideal world, you start the same 15 for four games in a row. You're not going to be fatigued for playing four games in a row, and that's obviously a dream scenario because that means you're going to a World Cup final. But from now on, it's your best 23. And I wouldn't even, the bonus points against Samoa, the bonus points sounds intimidating, but realistically, from a performance point of view, if you don't score four tries against Samoa, you'll be deeply disappointed. So you probably don't have grounds to go further in the competition, in the fact that, knowing that, the kind of game is changing a lot now, where a lot of penalties are kicked to touch for options to score a try, Nathan. So especially on fast pitches at Japan at the minute, it's more super rugby as opposed to Northern Hemisphere Cup rugby. So I wouldn't think that the four tries would be an issue at all this weekend.
Individually, the back line of it seems been performing quite well. Maybe there's an issue more with the collective, and there's the possibility and the hope certainly that Robbie Henshaw and Joey Carberry will be fit to have some sort of a part this weekend. With the minutes played and with what you've seen so far, look, what's your preferred backline outside of Johnny Sexton?
Yeah, well, I think that's why this week is so exciting, and the fact that it's probably for the first time in a number of months that you could have all your backs fit. Ireland haven't had that for any of the World Cup warm-ups. They haven't had it for any of the other three pool games. So for the first time, that's why the training week becomes incredibly important. So I would think that I think people underestimate too the impact of a quality bench, and the fact that the drive or the lift that gives the players that are actually on the pitch, when they have a look to the sideline, if there's a guy hurt or if there's a guy being replaced, actually who's coming on, and you kind of subconsciously go, oh, nice one, I like playing with this guy, or this guy's going to give a good. But that's the gut feeling of people that they never talk about. That's what happens. While if you have, for example, Robbie Henshaw, Chris Farrell, Joey Carberry not available, you're kind of having a look at the bench, and sometimes you're saying, oh, is he coming on? You know, because that's,
I'm going to have to cover for him.
That's what players do. Maybe not even cover, but what happens with Ireland and a lot of the best teams is that are in any great thing, I think, in great environments and great cultures, is that the people coming off the bench, their job isn't to take the role of the guy they've replaced. They've got to add something to the team and be better than the team. Be better than the guy they've replaced. It's not about filling in. So how you become better than actually the guy you're replacing is you fit into the team first and you do your basics well. But then against fatiguing defences, you've got to bring something to it. So it's not a case of being a passenger or a sheep. You've got to make sure that you are actually kicking on the team's performance, and it's expected of you in high-performing teams.
So you're feeling confident about the bonus point win?
I am. I am. I just think, I think we're all a little bit caught up in the negativity, maybe not negativity, but probably the disappointment of Japan. And I think they went over the top and kind of probably appreciating how good Russia were. And with hindsight, that wasn't an accurate probably description, because Scotland put 61 points on them. So now I think they've had a bit of time. They've had a little bit of reflection time, and they know that the next 2 weeks it's showtime, or else they're unfortunately going home.
All right, good stuff, Ronan. Best of luck against Breve at the weekend.
There's Nathan. Good luck to you too. Thanks. Get the chat.
All right, Ronan O'Gara there. Our rugby coverage is thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us. Everyone in.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of Us. Everyone in.